Your Steve Jones Show podcast is loading now. The Steve Jones Show podcast is sponsored by Sunbury Motors, North 4th Street in Sunbury, and Sunbury Motors Kia, routes 11 and 15 in Hummel's Wharf. Sports talk where your voice counts. This is the Steve Jones Show on News Radio 1070 WKOK. Now from the Sunbury Motors Studio, here's Steve Jones.
Sunbury Motors, 4th Street in Sunbury. Sunbury Motors Kia, routes 11 and 15 in Hummel's Wharf. It's great to be with you on this Thursday afternoon. Tony Knopp, the CEO of Spotlight Ticket Management, is going to join us on the show today. We have a lot of ground to cover with Tony today. I think you'll find it to be a fascinating segment with him. Sean, welcome. Great to have you with us.
Always a pleasure, sir. Afternoon.
The big news, of course, of the day is that O.J. Simpson has been granted parole. He will be released from a Nevada prison on October 1st. He was granted parole literally just minutes ago by a vote of 4-0. We'll talk about that in a moment. We'll get to the baseball scoreboard. Plenty of key afternoon games. Bottom of the seventh inning, the Pirates looking for the sweep over the Brewers, lead at 4-2 in the bottom of the seventh. Arizona leads Cincinnati 8-2 top of the ninth. The Mets have already beaten the Cardinals today 3-2. And Toronto leads the Red Sox 5-3, but that game is only in the bottom of the fourth inning. Open Championship, round one, Jordan Spieth, Matt Kuchar, and Brooks Koepka, all the leaders at 5 under par 65. Paul Casey, Charles Schwartzel, both one back at 4 under 66. Rafael Cabrera-Bello at 3 under par. Ian Poulter at 3 under par. And Thomas, a 3 under par as well today. Anybody else in there? That would be Charlie Hoffman's 3 under. And Matsuyama is at 2 under par. Ricky Fowler won over today. So that's the update on the news. O.J. Simpson to be released from prison in October from Lovelock in Nevada. This deals only with the 2008 conviction for armed robbery involving two sports memorabilia dealers in a Las Vegas hotel room. They deliberated about 30 minutes and came back with the 4-0 vote. He's been in prison for 9 years. And I know it is very hard to separate this. Very hard to separate it. But he is considered a first-time offender. And legally, he is a first-time offender. I'm not trying to defend anybody here, but it's up to the people in Nevada to, quote, follow the law. And oh, boy. It's not going to make a lot of people happy, obviously. But again, that's, you remember, like it or not, he was acquitted in the murders. And when it comes to the civil trial, different story in the civil case. And it was very interesting today. It was nationally televised by everybody. I think CBS, ABC, Headline News, CNN, MSNBC, Fox News, and ESPN all carried the hearing live. And, I mean, Sean, did you watch it? I did.
I did not watch it, but I did catch the audio that we had at the top of the hour with CBS, and even one of the... Even the gentleman that actually got robbed said, you know, this is time for him to get a second chance in life. So, I mean, just hearing that from that guy, it's like, hey, let's just move on. He's getting out of jail in October, and what's done is done.
Actually, when the original trial came up and they asked him at sentencing what he thought. He said 1 to 3 years. He had said 1 to 3 years originally. OJ has served 9 years. And so he'll be released as long as he continues to stay, obviously, in the straight and narrow. I mean, you know, you can lose it here in prison, but by all accounts, he's been a model prisoner. But he is... going to be released October 1st. The last parole hearing he had in which he was paroled on lesser charges. Now, he still had to go back to prison, but it did set the table for today's hearing. And when was that parole hearing? 2-3 years ago? And he appeared heavier, looked old. Today, he looked trimmer. Gray hair, but had certainly lost weight. He's 70 years of age now. His daughter spoke on his behalf today. And as Sean pointed out, the man that was the victim in the robbery spoke today. Said he and OJ made up a long time ago. It's hard in cases such as these. And remember, we had Peter King on the show. That's a completely different realm here, but it's, you know, you can connect the dots and say, remember, we had Peter King on, and I was talking to him about the Hall of Fame vote, because he has one. Peter's had one for a long time. He said, no matter who it is, we just try to do it on the football point of view and separate the ancillary stuff out. Now, that's ideology. I mean, that is ideology. Ideology as opposed to what some would think would be realism. And I understand that. In other words, my job is to vote on you as a football player. So now I've got a football player in front of me that was an awesome, great football player. And, I don't know, may have a long drug history or may have committed offenses outside of the game where they sullied their name. Human nature is going to be that human nature can wipe out, quote, ideology of separating. I'm just looking at the fact that he is a 20,000-yard, let's pick a position, 20,000-yard wide receiver with 150 touchdowns. Say somebody has the astronomical numbers such as that. But then off the field, boo. You know, they say that when it comes time to vote for the Hall of Fame, they talk about the football part of it. I'm sure they do talk about the football part of it. But, so, for this Nevada parole board, based on the fact that the man went through a jury trial, and the jury may not have come to the verdict that you thought it should have, it is their responsibility to look at him as a first-time offender in the state of Nevada. Now, you may not like that either. But what are they supposed to do? He was put on trial. It wasn't as if he skated on a technicality. He was put on trial for, 7-8 months? Somewhere between 7 and 9 months. I mean, I remember the verdict came down in the football season. So I thought that was in September it came down. I think the trial began January. So he has 8-month trial. So you go through an 8-month trial. In an 8-month trial, whether you agree with the verdict or not, he went through a jury trial. And the jury deliberated 4 hours and found him not guilty. You may, again, be vehement that he killed Nicole Brown Simpson and Ronald Goldman. I totally and completely respect that opinion. Now, this parole board here, as officers of the law, they put the sheet in front of him. Have you ever been convicted of another crime? The truthful answer is no, he hasn't. and he served 9 years for this crime, and he checked all the boxes. So on October 1st, he's going to be let out. Now, what he does with his life after this, who knows? And he still owes the Goldmans, I think, $33 million. Now, he's paid a little bit of it. But supposedly, I mean, he's got his NFL pension. He does have that. And
that's actually a bit of information a lot of people may have forgotten. Yes, he was still receiving his pension all these years. That was the one portion of cash that that remained untouched. No one could else get but him.
Right. He's the only one that can get his pension money. But he's also made other money along the way. Now, Darren Revelle of ESPN has put together a very interesting list on how Simpson probably made as much as $600,000 during his 8-plus years in prison. This is what Darren Revelle put together. The reason that the income, as he writes, is OJ's, unlike other money he might earn in the future, is because his NFL pension is protected by state law. There's been much confusion, he writes, as to how much Simpson was pulling in for his pension, but it's fairly easy to calculate since the terms of the NFL players' pensions are public. One factor that adds to the confusion, he writes, is the uncertainty of the age Simpson elected to begin collecting his pension. Simpson played from 69 to 79 between the Bills and the 49ers. NFL players who played before 1982 get a pension credit of $250 per season per month. I know I work with one of those individuals, so I've been talked to about this in just casual conversation. We just brought it up. As part of the settlement, former players were given an extra payment of $124 per month per season in seasons played before 1975, and $108 per month for subsequent years. Simpson played 6 years before. That's 124 times 6, $744. 5 seasons after, that's $108, which equals 540. So that's another $1,284. You add $1,284, he says, plus $2,750. That's $4,034 a month. That's what O.J. would have made if he elected to start taking out his NFL pension at the age of 55. Getting paid for 105 months in jail would mean he made $423,000. But if Simpson elected to wait until 65, and he just turned 70, he would collect 2.6 times that according to the formula, which means his pension would be $10,565 a month. Based on 57 months in jail after his 65th birthday, that means O.J. Simpson could have earned $602,205 over the last 57 months. How about that? Ron in Danville. Hi, Ron. How are you today?
Good, Steve. How are you doing? Thank you for taking my call. Just wondering why all this this scuttlebutt about O.J. Simpson. I mean, the man has done his time. He's, I guess, honorably done his time in jail. And everybody wants to talk about O.J. this and O.J. that. And I'm just wondering why that seems to be the news cycle. I mean, can't we move on to something else? I mean, we're giving this gentleman the news feeds that, you know, obviously he doesn't deserve.
I agree with that, Ron, completely. You know, when you're a 24-hour news organization or a 24-hour sports organization, probably they sat down in a room and said, this is the most compelling thing that we can put on. So they put it on with the idea that people were going to watch. In the end, you and I both know that television is not entertainment. It's a business. And in the business, they thought that this is what would get them viewers. And so that's why they put it on.
I understand that, but I just don't understand why other media outlets need to follow that script. I mean, just let it go. I mean, it's over with now. He's 70 years old. He's going to go off in the sunset. Hopefully he doesn't ever violate his parole again, or he'll be back in the news. But that chapter is closed. It should be closed and remain closed, not just for the people who loved O.J. as I did, but also the victims of whatever he has done to them. It's time to just move on, I think.
Well, you know, if you're the age of, let's be conservative here and say 28. Say you're 28 years old. This is a myth to you because this happened 22 years ago. You're 6 years old when this came through. So if you're 28 or younger, this is something you read about in a book or it's something you see in a documentary. It's, you know, it's not really real to you the way for you and me, the way every single day it played out like a soap opera on the air. Unfortunately, it was a real-life soap opera because two people were brutally murdered in this. But when it comes to what happened today, that's not the job of the parole board. The job of the parole board in Nevada is to look at the base piece of paper and see what boxes are checked. And when it comes to any priors, check the box no. Doesn't have one. Whether you agree with the jury verdict or not, they still have to check the box no.
You're right. Absolutely. And I agree with that part of it. I just wish it wasn't so sensationalized that, you know, the man is going to be, I think, you know, scarred beyond reproach when he gets out, because people are going to be out for him. They're going to be looking for a reason to call the parole board and tell them that he's doing something wrong, even if he's not. He's going to be vilified. I think we all know that.
Well, he was vilified when he got out. I mean, the first day after he was acquitted, when he went to his home and he saw all these people in his home he didn't really know, and the people that he thought were his friends weren't there. That was a huge, huge shock for him that particular day. So he's been vilified since the day he walked into an L.A. County jail.
Yeah. I hear you. One more quick question, Steve, if you have the time.
Sure.
What's your thought process, and I don't mean to change the subject, but what's your thought process on our Penn State and the Lions this year?
It's a good football team. You can just see it in practice by the they understand the pace with which James wants to practice. The veterans all get it. You see older players now. There are finally a lot of older players in the program, Ron, and you can see the older players teaching the younger players what it's like to be at Penn State. You know, little tricks of the trade, things like that, that can make a difference on the field. You have a really good quarterback. You've got arguably the best running back in the country. You have a tight end that everybody would love to have. And I think one of the keys is, Ron, that for the first time in years now, there are a lot of positive things to say about not only the offensive line, but the depth of the offensive line. They've made great strides forward. They're going to start the year ranked in the top 10. Every week is going to feel in its own way like a little bit of a playoff game. And I think that kind of tension is going to be fun for all of us to watch.
Awesome, Steve. Thank you so much for your time and pleasure to talk to you. Sorry if I came off a little bit standoffish. I love your show, and I look forward to talking to you again.
Ron, I thoroughly enjoyed the conversation. Thanks for some very interesting points.
Thank you.
All right, coming up, sports business writer for Forbes. Yes, we're going to have a guest from Forbes on the show. Okay? And Kurt Baderhausen. And people within the station are now wondering if I can intellectually hang with this dude. The sports guy talks to a guy from Forbes. Next on News Radio 1070 WKOK.
Who has the number one brand?
2 years in a row?
It's Sunbury Motors Kia. I want to see you in a Kia. Sunbury Motors Kia.
Mary Motors Kia has the highest ranked large car, compact car, small SUV, midsize SUV, and compact multi-purpose vehicle in initial quality according to J.D. Powers.
See for yourself at SMC.
The 2017 Kia Soul starting at $16,998. 2017 all-wheel drive Sorento starting at $24,999. 2017 Fortes as low as $15,997. Or Kia's new 50 MPG CUV, the 2017 Niro starting at $22,879. With 60 new Kias to choose from,
all clearly sale price,
and backed by Kia's 10-year, 100,000-mile limited powertrain warranty, there's a lot to celebrate. Hurry into Sunbury Motors Kia on the Golden Strip in Hummel's Wharf or at sunburymotorskia.com.
Taxes, tax extra. Warranty is a limited powertrain warranty. For details, see retailer or go to kia.com. For J.D. Power 2017 U.S. initial quality study, visit jdpower.com/cars.
Taking your calls at 800-795-9565. This is the Steve Jones Show on News Radio 1070 WKOK. Now, from the Sunbury Motors Studio, here's Steve Jones.
Sunbury Motors, 4th Street in Sunbury. Sunbury Motors Kia, routes 11 and 15 in Hummel's Wharf. And now for the segment all of you have been waiting for, the sports guy talks to a guy from Forbes. Oh, this will be good. Kurt Badenhausen, who does great work for Forbes. Kurt, welcome. It's great to have you on the show for the first time.
Thanks for having me on, Steve. I'm just a sports guy, too, so no worries.
Way to ease it in with me. Very nice. A couple things I noticed right away. I'll start with this. The impact of the NFL, in which you have 29 of the 51, because the Angels and the Saints are tied for 50. 29 of the 51 are NFL teams. When I see the Jacksonville Jaguars worth $1.95 billion and up 32%, that to me makes a big statement.
Yeah, it doesn't matter whether you're in Jacksonville or Chicago or Philadelphia, no matter where you are. If you are an NFL team, you got a good thing going on. You're guaranteed to make money. And owning one of those 32 NFL franchises, it's a road to profitability and incredibly high-profile gig. You know, it's not like owning a small market Major League Baseball team or something. Just being in that NFL club is a big deal. These teams almost never come on the market. So when they do, people are beating down the door to get into the NFL club. And with that national TV deal, $7 billion these guys are chopping up every single year before they sell a ticket, a beer, or a jersey. So every team, by our count, made more than $25 million in profit for the 2015 season. And those TV deals are locked in into the next decade. The CBA right now, you know, guarantees the players less than 50% of gross revenue. So good time to be an NFL owner, that's for sure.
No, absolutely no doubt about that. I think the Bengals, the Lions, and the Bills were the only three that didn't make the top 51.
And finished just outside the top 50. I don't think you could get an NFL team for less than probably $1.7-1.8 billion right now, and that includes those real small markets.
You also have international soccer in here among the most valuable in the world. This, again, is on pure value. Yet what I found interesting, it's only slight, but Real Madrid went down 2%. Arsenal went down 4%. What accounted for that?
That's really a function of the weakness of the euro, the weakness of the British pound. Both of those currencies have really been hammered versus the U.S. dollar over the last 12 months. Great Britain voted to remove itself from the European Union, which killed the British pound. And so if you looked at it in their local currencies, whether euros for the Spanish clubs or British pounds for the teams in England, they're up. But if you translate it into U.S. dollars, those clubs took a hit over the last 12 months.
In fact, I believe after Brexit, the euro got as low as, I think, $1.02, $1.03, and I think the pound got as low as, what, $1.14? Does that sound right?
Yeah. No, absolutely. It's gone up a little bit since then.
Right.
But, you know, the dollar is so much stronger compared to those currencies these days. So that's what really hurt those clubs. But they're killing it, too. I mean, particularly the Premier League clubs, it's very similar to the NFL. Massive television package that really helps all those Premier League teams.
Yeah, between Sky Sports and then, of course, what they were able to negotiate over here with NBC Sports and Fox, it's really paid off for them.
Yeah, Premier League is absolutely hot right now. And what's incredible about these clubs, particularly the top-tier clubs, is Real Madrid or Manchester United or Barcelona, they can go into basically every part of the world and do a sponsorship deal. You know, you can't do that. A baseball team can't do that. A football team, a National Football League team can't do that. But these soccer clubs, they do deals all over the world because they have such a huge following just about every part of the globe. And so sponsorship revenue, merchandise revenue for these teams play a much bigger part in the overall revenue stream than what you might have with, say, a baseball team in the United States or a team in the NFL.
Kurt, I'm glad you brought that part up because I want to talk about the Dallas Cowboys. I think a lot of people don't realize that the NFL as a group has 31 teams involved in the Nike and merchandising deal, but the Cowboys have their own separate deal. How much does that account for the fact that they are number one on most valuable?
That certainly contributes to it. I think they'd be number one either way, but the gap might not be $800 million between the Cowboys and Patriots. But Jerry Jones went out on his own. He said, you know what? I can sell a lot more Cowboys stuff if I'm in control of everything. And to his credit, it has worked out. He still has to contribute. The Cowboys were always the biggest seller. So the NFL, under terms of the separation, they demanded that the Cowboys continue to contribute a significant share into the pot. But it has absolutely been a home run to mix sports here analogies. And they generate tens of millions of dollars in profit from that merchandise business by running it on his own. And he's expanded it beyond just Cowboys gear. He's doing merchandise for all sorts of sports entities. And so you have this economy of scale where it's not just the Cowboy business, but Jerry's also making money by producing other merchandise. And that's money that falls outside of money that has to be shared with other teams when you're talking about establishing a salary cap in the NFL.
In the number 12 spot, the Los Angeles Rams, the increase from 1 year to the next in terms of value, 100%. Is that just purely on St. Louis to the value of the Los Angeles market?
Mostly. I mean, we have every NFL team up just because teams are making so much money and it's such a good business. But absolutely, the Rams had the biggest gain year over year, went from outside the top 50 to number 12, as you say, worth $2.9 billion. And that is a function of trading the St. Louis market for Los Angeles. Stan Kroenke is going to build this sports and entertainment mecca out in L.A., spending $2.6 billion. He's going to get some PSL money and a little bit a loan from the NFL, but he's footing the bill for the most part. And so their financial structure totally changes, going from a small market where they're hanging on. They're at the bottom of the league in revenue, down with the Raiders and Jacksonville and a few other teams. And they're going to catapult right to the top. They're not going to catch the Cowboys, maybe not the Patriots, but they should be a top five team in revenue, even with how terrible they are on the field. It is going to be a destination spot. The NFL is very excited about it. They're going to send a Super Bowl certainly there once the stadium's up and running. They're going to have all kinds of events there. They really look at it as almost a West Coast headquarters for the NFL with all the events that they want to run through there. So Stan Kroenke's got huge plans for that stadium, which is really going to be much more than just a stadium. It's going to be a huge sports and entertainment complex with the stadium and then the whole area around it built up as well. He's a real estate guy, and he looks at this as really a real estate play.
Yeah, I know when I was out to broadcast the Rose Bowl, we went by Hollywood Park, and it was still an empty lot over there. But I guess when it's all said and done, he wants to turn this into, quote, a campus where NFL Network's going to be, NFL.com's going to be, plus the stadium and other entities, correct?
Yeah, it's going to be much more than just a stadium. And, you know, that money, again, that is generated from football events, that all flows to the Rams. But a lot of these guys, whether you're talking about the Rams, what the Patriots have done around Gillette Stadium with Patriots Place, the Cowboys are always pushing the envelope in terms of generating revenue outside of the football team. And, again, that money doesn't flow to the NFL when they start calculating salary cap, but it obviously flows to the bottom line when you're talking about the Kraft family or Jerry Jones or with Stan Kroenke out in L.A.
Obviously, some people look at the value of a franchise, and I'm talking from the outside looking in without really understanding how value is calculated, and they'll see something like the New York Knicks being in the top 10, and the Knicks have done virtually nothing, as you and I both know, in the court for a while, and they see the Cleveland Cavaliers nowhere near the top 50 on this, and they've got LeBron James. So explain to everybody how that works out and why the value is so great for one that loses versus one that doesn't have the same value but wins.
Sure. Well, the Cavaliers are losing a lot of money. It's costing them a lot of money to win these championships. They've annihilated the luxury tax threshold in the NBA. But any buyer coming into this situation is looking forward. They're not looking at how awful the Knicks have been on the court over the last 10 years. That doesn't help the equation. If the Knicks were good, I think the value of the team would be even higher. But they're looking at revenue streams. And as bad as the Knicks have been, they still have the highest revenue in all of the NBA. That's without going to the playoffs. They considerably higher than the Cleveland Cavaliers. Because of the New York market, they're able to charge dramatically more for tickets, suites, sponsorships, you name it. The cost is higher in New York. And Knicks fans have continued to support the team and show up for games despite how bad the team has been on the court. And so as great as things are for Cleveland right now, you know, LeBron's not playing forever. We don't know if he's going to be in Cleveland beyond this year. So you're buying the team not knowing if you're getting, you know, one more year, five more years of LeBron. You know, best case scenario is maybe eight. But, you know, if you're investing this team long term, you've got to look at the market. You got to look at the venue situation and not just your current roster of players.
I have to ask you about McGregor Mayweather because you wrote another very interesting article about that Mayweather now is a possibility with this fight with McGregor to go over $1 billion in career earnings. And as you point out in the article, Michael Jordan, Tiger Woods have done that. And if you adjust for inflation, you can put Arnold Palmer, Jack Nicklaus, and the race car driver Michael Schumacher in there. What are the dynamics of this fight and what can it mean earnings-wise on August 26th?
It's hard to watch this and take it seriously, but people are clearly entertained.
I totally agree with you. I mean, I thought Pacquiao and Mayweather would be boxing's first no-hitter, and it lived up to my expectations.
Right. It's incredible. But it's hard to deny the entertainment factor. I think the whole press four-day, four-city press tour got up to be a bit much as they just rehashed the same tired lines. But, come August 26th, people are going to buy this fight. You know, for $100, people are going to get together and chop it up amongst themselves, and they're going to buy the money. Wouldn't surprise me at all if this thing broke the Mayweather-Pacquiao pay-per-view mark of $4.6 million. And if that's the case, Mayweather's looking at another, you know, $250 million payday, which from is our estimate what he made once everything was counted and all the money. He's still collecting money from that fight because these guys take forever to report their pay-per-view results. So, you know, by our count, he made about $250 million from the Pacquiao fight, and he should receive a similar cut with this McGregor fight if it does that kind of pay-per-view business. So it all comes down to the pay-per-view number. You know, Mayweather, you know, he needs to bring it in because he, you know, flies out the window just as quickly with how he spends his money.
Right.
So it's... I think people will buy this thing, and it's going to do huge business. By our count, total revenue for the Mayweather-Pacquiao fight was over $600 million, which at the time was, we'd never seen a $600 million night in sports. Not the Super Bowl, not any one night sporting event. It's a staggering sum of money to generate for 36 minutes of action. It should be entertaining. They've pulled this. They've done an incredible job pulling this all together. I mean, if you think about Mayweather-Pacquiao, it dragged on for 6 years before it finally came to fruition. This thing they're putting together in a few months, and everybody's gonna make money. Outside of the fan, that is.
Right, yeah, the fan won't. One final question, then I'll let you go, Kurt. Thanks a lot for the time. I really appreciate it. And that deals with the fact that there's UFC involved in this. What have you seen in growth of UFC? And obviously they've been able to promote a great star like Ronda Rousey, who now has lost her last two, but McGregor's been a great star on the men's side. What has that meant to you, to the payday, in your opinion?
For the UFC business, has been great. They built the business
$4 billion. With Mayweather, having the UFC component, having McGregor building his reputation in UFC.
Yeah, I think it's huge. I think bringing these two together is the only thing that could bring this kind of payday for Mayweather or McGregor. I mean, McGregor's looking at a minimum payout of $75 million. That's five times what he's ever made for a UFC fight. So, I mean, this is a totally different level. I think bringing these two audiences together gives it that potential to generate 4.5 million pay-per-view buys. Mayweather coming out of retirement to face anybody else, I mean, what would people pay? Who would they pay for him to see? Maybe right. Triple G? I mean, on the chance that he'd get knocked out, but Mayweather would never take that fight. So,
no.
I don't know who he could possibly fight in the boxing world that would generate anywhere close to this level of interest. So I think this was the one fight. And the novelty aspect of it, as much as the boxing experts totally dismiss the idea that McGregor can keep up with him, the novelty of it, and people pay up because they want to see somebody knock Mayweather out.
Yes.
I mean, that's why people keep buying his fights. They want to see somebody who's going to be the person that finally does it. And I think people have bought into the idea that, you know, that McGregor might be powerful enough, and he lands one punch and it's lights out for Mayweather. And that's why you'll see a lot of people pay for this fight.
He doesn't have a boxer's chance, but he has a puncher's chance. That's a big
difference. Absolutely, Steve.
Kurt, an absolute pleasure. Thanks so much. I appreciate the time very much, and hopefully we can tap into that knowledge even more so over time. The audience loved it.
Sounds good. Would love to. Thanks so much, Steve.
Kurt Badenhauser joining us from Forbes magazine. All right, when's the last time Lawrence had anybody on from Forbes? I mean, really.
I have to look back, but I'm pretty confident.
Look back what?
Okay, he hasn't.
Okay. Come on. Tony Knopp next half hour as we continue on News Radio 1070 WKOK. All right, Tony Knopp next half hour. The Pirates have won today. They end up sweeping the Brewers. So they gained four games on the Brewers and now are three games back. But it also should be pointed out that with the win today, the Pirates finally for the season got back to 500. That shows you how far back they've been in this. They've won 11 of their last 13. That gets them back to 500. They're three games back. The Diamondbacks routed Cincinnati 12-2 today. The Mets beat the Cardinals 3-2. And in the bottom of the sixth at Fenway, the Blue Jays lead the Red Sox 7-3. Tony Knopp next half hour. Thought that was a fascinating half hour with Kurt Badenhauser. That was a great get. Sean, great job. As always.
Kind, sir. Appreciate it. Thank you.
Oh, by the way, it was mentioned to be on the phone yesterday.
Okay.
I guess the suit's coming back to do Shikellamy football.
Reality sets in.
So in the next half hour, a write-in campaign. Let's talk about it.
We are your home for the Philadelphia Phillies. News Radio 1070 WKOK Sunbury.